please help me welcome Tom Vilsack.
How much are the dues?
I don't know. I think they're $50.
Okay. Thank you, folks. Thank you. Thank you very much. I just asked Roger how much the dues were. So I checked my card when I came in here, and my membership expires in at the end of this month. So is $50 what it is at in Iowa? Well, we have a little auction here. Is it $50? Okay. All right. There we go. So I'm paid up. Well, I really appreciate the opportunity to be with you this morning. I have a great fondness for the National Farmers Union, and it does, in fact, stem from my time as a practicing lawyer in Mount Pleasant, Iowa, and the good work that we did during the tough times of the 1980s as farmers, at least in my home state, went through a very, very tough time. I just simply want to say at the beginning of this how much I appreciate and how much I respect Roger Johnson. I think it is usual in speeches like this that the leadership of an organization is acknowledged. But I really sincerely want you all to know you are extraordinarily well served by Roger. As you can no doubt anticipate, especially when there is a farm bill pending or there is a piece of legislation that may impact and affect farmers across the country, there is a chance for a Secretary of Agriculture to reach out to farm leaders and farm group leaders. I can tell you that Roger has always been available. He has always been thoughtful. He has always had a creative and innovative approach to difficulties, and I will tell you that he and Chandler Gould served the National Farmers Union extraordinarily well during the recent efforts to get our farm bill done. And Roger, I just want to thank you and Chandler for the work that you all did. I don't think we would have had a farm bill without your input and National Farmers Union support. So I think it's important for me, first and foremost, when I give remarks to a group like this, to remind everybody of why it's important that this country pay attention to and appreciate what goes on in rural America. I mean, before me today and before just about any audience I visit with in which there are farmers and ranchers and producers, I point out that there are basically five securities in this country that we enjoy in large part because of the contributions that rural folks make. There is the obvious food security, which is that you all, as the greatest producers in the world, allow us in this country to have an opportunity to basically not have to depend on a single outside source for our food and nourishment. There is the energy security we now enjoy in this country, having substantially reduced the amount of dependence we've had on foreign energy sources, in large part because of the contribution that rural America makes. From renewable energy to new oil and gas finds, this is all pretty much located in rural areas. You can't have a solar farm or a wind farm or a geothermal dam or hydro dam, a geothermal system, unless it's located in a rural community. And you can't very well mine for coal or gas or oil without doing it in a rural area. So we are an energy secure country today in large part because of the contributions of rural America. Because our food is so affordable, in large part because of the efficiencies of our farm community, Americans enjoy economic security. That is to say, they have a lot more of their money when they leave a grocery store left of their paychecks than most people do around the world, which gives us the ability to go out and purchase other consumer goods, which helps to employ and keep our economy strong. And as we discuss and deal with the issue of changing climates, and as we begin to adapt and mitigate to that changing climate, most of the strategies that we will focus on will impact and affect and be implemented, no doubt, in rural America. So to a certain extent, our environmental security is much dependent upon the folks who live, work, and raise their families in rural communities. And on top of all of that, it's the rural families of this country that provide a disproportionate number of our military. So our national security is so much dependent on rural America. So five securities: food, energy, the economy, the environment, and national security, all a result of the contributions of rural America. So it is important for this country to pay attention to what goes on in rural America, to understand the dynamics and the economy of rural America, and if there is in need of assistance and help, the country should respond, because it's in the interest of everyone in the United States of America that rural America be healthy. So I wish I could report to you that there is no need for help. But the reality is we've had two reports recently that put a fine point on the need for us to be aggressive in our care and commitment of rural America. First, there is the Ag Census that was issued last month. Preliminary information from that census suggests that we have fewer farms in this country and that we've seen an increase in larger sized operations and a resurgence of very, very small operations, but a shrinking middle. That concerns me, and I know that it concerns you, and it ought to concern America. There is the notion of the aging nature of full-time operators in this country, now the average age at 58, increasing by a year over the last census. True, we have had a resurgence of young people getting into this business, but we still have a disproportionate number of people 65 and older, which raises a challenge for us in the short term. The Rural Economy at a Glance report that was furnished by our Economic Research Service points out that despite the fact that our country has expanded job opportunities in 48 consecutive months, and we've added over 8.5 million new jobs to our economy, there have been very few net job gains in rural America. Incomes in rural America are significantly below those of our urban and suburban friends, even though the average farm family has a higher median income. And all of that has led to young people looking for opportunities in those suburbs and in those cities, which has resulted for the first time in a decline in population. On top of all of that, we have a changing and challenging climate, from droughts and floods to more intense storms, which create serious challenges to our capacity to continue to produce. So it's important for us at this juncture to pay attention to rural America. It's important because of its value, and it's important because of the challenges that it faces. But I believe we're on the right track. I believe that a good day has occurred for rural America with the final passage of our Farm Bill. I think it does a lot to begin addressing some of these concerns and open up new opportunities and restore our commitment to innovation, and I want to talk to you about that. And then I'd like to talk for just a few minutes about our specific effort at USDA to try to continue to re-energize the small to mid-sized operations in this country, given the constraints that we're currently operating under at USDA. And then I will finish with one last comment about the importance of rural America. So first of all, the Farm Bill. Now, you may have already heard a lot of this, but it probably bears repeating. We at USDA have gone through a very significant process in which we have asked our team to look at each individual title of the Farm Bill and determine within it what are the most significant things we need to do now. What steps must we take? What are the priority things that have to be implemented to provide as much help and assistance as we possibly can provide with this new opportunity? And then we have put together a smaller group that oversees this entire operation. And they are, within each title, then taking the most important priority items and then prioritizing them again throughout the entire USDA so that we don't create this blockage that often occurs in the implementation of a Farm Bill, where we have the conservation folks moving forward, the rural development folks moving forward, the commodity folks moving forward, and all of a sudden it comes to a screeching halt at the General Counsel's office or at our Budget and Policy office or at OMB. We want to basically manage this in a way that things continually flow through the process. So we have determined that we can do quite a bit in 2014, that we must do quite a bit in 2014. We start with the livestock disaster programs because we know for far too long our producers across the country have gone through very difficult circumstances, whether it's snowstorms that were unexpected or floods or drought. And the fact is we didn't have those disaster assistance programs in place after October of 2011. So the first thing we are focusing on is making sure we do whatever we have to do to resurrect and resume those disaster assistance programs. And our goal is to make sure that folks can begin applying for disaster assistance on or before April 15th of this year, and that shortly thereafter resources will flow to those producers. Because we know that the failure to extend those programs and to get a farm bill sooner than we got probably already cost us some producers. We also know that it's important that we get information out to producers on the new programs. Whether it's ARC or PLC, we need to get information out to you so that you can make informed choices for the crop year of 2015. So we will be spending the next several months getting the education materials together, putting the website together, getting connected with university partners who are going to get the word out, making sure that folks check their production histories, get their documents in order. And then we hope in the fall to begin providing additional information, and by the late fall, early winter, we would expect and anticipate people would be in a position to make elections for the crop year 2015. At the same time that's going to happen, we're obviously going to be working to provide you information on the supplemental coverage option under crop insurance. We know that those elections have to be made a little bit sooner than the PLC and ARC elections, and we know that may impact and affect winter wheat folks, and so we're making sure that if you make the election to buy up that supplemental coverage option, and then you ultimately elect that ARC is the best deal for you, that you're not in a situation where you're paying for coverage you can't take advantage of. So we're going to give folks up probably up until about November 15th to maybe change their decision as it relates to that supplemental option if they decide to go. ARC gives a little more flexibility. So most of that work should be done, and the STACS program should also, at least to the counties where we have enough history and enough data, folks should have a good understanding of where those programs are the summer and fall of this year. We'll obviously try to institute as quickly as we can the beginning farmer and rancher incentives that are in the crop insurance program this summer. We'll try to launch enough information about the whole farm policy pilot that we're going to set up this summer. So we're going to be aggressive in this safety net space. We know how important it is. We're also going to be aggressive in the credit area. We know that there are a couple of changes that are important. There's a beginning farmer and rancher incentive that makes it a little bit easier and a little bit less expensive to access credit for beginning farmers. We want that to be instituted sometime in the latter part of 2014. We want to eliminate the term limits on guaranteed loans this spring. And we know that we have an opportunity to adjust the interest rate for several hundred producers who are involved in the Joint Financing Farm Ownership Loan Program. That interest rate actually can be cut in half and will be this spring. So safety net, credit priorities, disaster assistance priorities. Now, we feel pretty good about conservation. We know that the EQIP and CSP signups are already taking place. We'll begin to give people a sense of whether or not their contracts are acceptable sometime this summer, and hopefully by the late summer, obligations will start to flow. The new easement programs, the wetland easement program is already accepting applications, and the agricultural easement program we hope to have in place sometime in the fall of 2014. So a lot of what you all need to know and what you need to do is going to be in place hopefully sometime this year. MILC will be in place between now and September. For our dairy producers, our hope is and belief is that we're not likely, given dairy prices as they are today and exports as they are today, to need it, but it will be there if we do. And then come September, we should have in place the new margin protection program. So there is a lot of work that has to be done to get those programs in a way that is satisfactory to you and gives you the opportunity to make informed decisions. We're also not going to let up on our promotion of agricultural products. We know how important trade is. 20% of all agricultural income is related to trade. So we obviously want to continue to promote trade. We had a hiatus here when the Farm Bill lapsed last year. We had a period of time when we were uncertain about how far and how aggressive we could promote trade. Farm Bill restores those programs. We're back in business. We're adding a different twist this year, and that is we see a real opportunity for the promotion of renewable fuels, not just here in the United States, but also internationally. We think there are target markets in Korea and Japan and China. We know we have some education to do in order for them to see the benefits from an octane and air quality stand, but we feel we can be aggressive in our efforts. We can take some of those trade promotion resources and use them to promote renewable fuels. And for the first time ever, we'll be doing a trade mission this spring to China, and we will include a delegation related to ethanol to begin that process. We see this as a real opportunity for us to be a bit more aggressive than we've been. And we're not going to take a step back in terms of our promotion of this important industry here in the United States. We're going to continue to use our resources as best we can to expand opportunities for higher blends. But while we're doing that, we can also begin to educate the rest of the world about the importance of this fuel. So we will be aggressive in trade. There's a whole lot more about the Farm Bill that I could speak to, but let me shift for just a few minutes to talk to you a little bit about what we're doing in terms of how we think we can help rebuild and accelerate the rebuilding of smaller-sized and mid-sized operations. Because I think that's extremely important and vital, not just to agriculture, but to the future of rural America. I think it is important for us to embrace diversity in agriculture, and by diversity I mean it in the broadest possible way. Diversity of crops, diversity of size of operations, diversity of those who are producing our crops. That is one of the strategies to move rural America forward. So what can we do? Well, everybody in this audience knows, and if you don't know, you're about to know, that Congress has not been particularly helpful when it comes to gypsum. We made an effort, as you know, early in the first administration to level the playing field just a bit in the markets, because the reality is the markets pay premiums for efficiency and quantity, which oftentimes plays to the strengths of larger operations. We felt there were some changes that could be made. Well, Congress had a different view of that. They not only said we couldn't do it, they said we couldn't spend any money doing it. And so, as I have been saying in a number of audiences here, I've been quoting my father-in-law frequently. He used to say, for every dote, there's an antidote. So Congress says, you can't use gypsum. Okay, what can we use? We are a very comprehensive department. We have lots of tools. And the question is, are we using those tools as effectively, as creatively and innovatively as we can? Well, we're going to launch a couple of things here. I mean, first of all, we're going to launch what we refer to as a quick learning series. And this will start with livestock and poultry producers, small, medium-sized livestock and poultry producers. It will be web-based. It will be a way of us introducing to folks information about all of the programs that are available in USDA to try to help those small to medium-sized operators access credit, learn more about markets, how to help create markets, how to promote their product, how to deal with some of the safety rules that are forthcoming. It'll give folks a one-stop shop, if you will, for information. And at the same time we start to do that, we're also going to take a look at how we provide market information. Most of the market information we provide is pretty much commodity-based and commodity-sized operation-based. We think there's a better job we can do by providing information on local and regional food production and the prices that folks are getting for those locally and regionally produced foods. So we'll be expanding our market news to incorporate that information and in turn provide it to all of you. We think it's important for you all to know where those local and regional markets might be. You may have a good idea of where they are in your locale, but in the event you don't, or in the event you're open to learning new information, we're going to expand the directory that has a listing of all those local and regional market opportunities so that it might prompt you to think about a new market opportunity or a new crop that you could produce that could take advantage of a local and regional market. We're obviously going to continue to aggressively promote on the credit side the microloan program, which has been very successful. I think we've now gone into about 5,000 applications for microloans. They are a very popular product, so popular that Congress embraced the microloan program in this farm bill, raised the credit level from $35,000 to $50,000. So that gives us an opportunity to do just a little bit more. You know, there's it's a seven-year loan. The interest rate is very affordable. And the reality is there's great flexibility in terms of what you can use that loan for. So we are encouraged by the reaction to the microloan program, so we're going to continue to promote it, expand it. For those who are organic producers, the Farm Bill also provided for an increase in cost share. We used to give about $750 to help folks transition. Now that's gone up to $1,500. We'll continue to dole those resources out as quickly as we can until the money runs out. We know that within the credit system, the traditional credit system, there will now be incentives and make it just a bit easier, as I said earlier, for beginning farmers and ranchers to utilize that traditional credit source. We will be instituting those rules and aggressively promoting them. I'm proud to say that we anticipate that 85% of the loans that we will make this year and next year and future years will be to beginning farmers and ranchers and those who are disadvantaged economically. We are hopeful to use this resource to provide the credit to those who have the greatest need for credit and who may have the greatest difficulty securing it. We will also institute and expand and promote significantly our Beginning Farmer and Rancher Development Program that will provide assistance to put together the business case that allows you then to get the credit, to plant the crop, to take advantage of that local market. There's additional resources for that Beginning Farm and Rancher program, and I will tell you that we will spend a lot of time trying to figure out how to make that readily available to our veterans. We are of a strong belief that a lot of these young men and women who have served us so admirably and so bravely would like to be able to come back to their home area. They just aren't sure what the opportunities are. And we also know from research that those who come back, who have witnessed war and witnessed the difficulties and challenges and tragic circumstances of war, are in need of something that is rehabilitating and restoring and rejuvenating. They have seen enough of death. They want to see what life looks like. Well, that's the great thing about farming and ranching. It's all about life. It's all about growing. It's all about restoring. So to the extent that we can make these programs more readily available, provide credit, provide market information and markets to these returning veterans, our belief is that a lot of them will want to get into and stay in the business of farming. Now, to stay in that business, you obviously have to have risk management tools. I will never forget, so long as I live, the young farmer that I met in Delaware. He wrote me a wonderful email about how excited he was to be a farmer and how he started farming with not a whole lot of knowledge about it, put his first crop in the ground. One of those huge storms came up the East Coast, totally wiped him out. He was appreciative of the work that the Farm Service Agency office did for him and giving him a second chance, and he planted that second crop, and he had a good year, and over the next couple of years, he had real good years. He said he wanted to meet me, and I wanted to meet him, so I went to Delaware to give a speech, and I didn't expect to see what I saw, which was a young man who had lost both of his legs in a wheelchair, and he came up, and he identified himself, introduced himself. I put his name with the email, And I realize that this can be, ought to be, should be, the face of American agriculture. There shouldn't be a disability that makes it impossible for you to partake in this great calling. But you have to have risk management tools because Mother Nature sometimes doesn't provide the perfect weather. And a lot of the folks who are from the western part of the United States certainly understand that today as they deal with drought. So that's why it was important for us to figure out ways in which we could make risk management tools more readily available to all kinds of producers. And I'm proud of the fact that we've expanded the number of policies that are currently being issued. We're going to continue that expansion. I'm happy about the fact we have a whole farm pilot that we're going to put together. I'm happy about the fact that beginning farmers won't have to pay quite as much a premium as a more mature operator will have to pay, so there's more incentives. And I'm happy about the fact that we're developing new pricing mechanisms for organic producers that makes it a little bit easier for them to access and take advantage of this risk management tool because they have a higher value-added product and it isn't necessarily reflected in traditional crop insurance policies. So all of that will be done at the same time we're extending credit, at the same time we're providing more information, at the same time we're trying to create new market opportunities. We know that a lot of these young producers may get themselves in a specialty crop production process, and they may have concerns about the Farm Safety Modernization Act, which is why we will begin aggressively promoting training for those folks so that they understand precisely what their responsibilities and obligations are under that act so that they will be able to comply with it or understand if there is an exemption for their operation from it. So that will also begin. You know, we have a farm storage facility loan program that has been underutilized. It has been in the past used for bins and barns, and it needs to continue to be used for that. But there's no reason why it can't be used for wash and pack stations as well for specialty crop producers, and there really isn't any reason why we should burden those folks with a requirement that they have a heavy a level of insurance. There are ways in which we can securitize these loans more effectively, so we are expanding the use and the availability of that farm storage facility loan program to a wider audience, particularly young and beginning farmers. We're going to continue to invest in conservation. As these young farmers get into the business, they want to extend their growing season. If they've got a specialty crop, the high tunnel houses will still be available. NRCS will continue to fund those. We may see an increase, an announcement here shortly about that. We're going to launch the voluntary access program. A lot of folks don't understand that there is a chance for an income opportunity to use your conservation resources that increase habitat. You may be fortunate to have good hunting ground. You may be fortunate to be close to a pretty good fishing hole, but it is private, and you are not inclined to want a whole lot of folks coming onto your land. But the voluntary access program will provide compensation if you are interested in providing that opportunity. It's another income source. And it's a few extra bucks to take advantage of a relatively short time period to provide access for folks who want to hunt and fish and use the opportunities that you're helping to create through conservation. We're going to continue to aggressively promote the CRP transition program. You know that's a program where as folks are getting out of the business, their CRP can be extended if they provide opportunities for young and beginning farmers and small and mid-sized operators. We're working with our land grant friends that when we close or change an ARS lab and there is land surrounding it, we are required to basically give that land to a university. I believe we ought to give it to them. We ought to comply with the law, but we ought to ask a little something from the university. And that little something should be that they make that land more readily available, less expensively available, to beginning farmers and ranchers and mid-sized operators so that they don't quite have quite the land costs that, and they aren't necessarily competing against folks who are in a position to pay a little higher cash rent. So we're expanding opportunities in terms of land availability. None of this works unless there's market opportunity. You got to be able to sell whatever it is you're growing. So we will continue to be aggressive in our utilization of resources to expand opportunity. We have a business and industry loan program, and the reality is that we will set aside 5% of that program to fund local and regional food systems. That would be the development of food hubs. That would be the development of processing facilities that can use whatever it is you're growing and be able to either accumulate it and process it and package it uniformly so it can be sold locally or converted into a more high value-added opportunity. When you combine that set aside, with the energy title of the Farm Bill that gives us the ability not only to invest in biorefineries but now in bioproduct manufacturing, you open up a whole new opportunity of economic job growth and innovation in rural America. You can now take virtually anything you grow and any product from it, any residue from it, any waste product from it, and you can convert it into a chemical, into a polymer, into a fabric, into a fiber. It can be done in a small bioprocessing facility. The Business and Industry Loan Program, the Energy Title of the Farm Bill provides credit opportunities, provides the resource to be able to build these facilities. It creates a real market opportunity. We'll continue to invest in farmers' market promotion. We'll triple the resources available for that. We'll continue to focus more resources in our value-added producer grant program. All of this is designed to create market opportunities. So if you look at it, we start with more information about where the markets are. We give you better information about pricing. We extend credit opportunities, both small-size loans and larger-size loans. We create new risk management tools to use for small to mid-sized operators. We create new storage opportunities. We continue to invest in conservation and give you additional income sources from it, and we expand market opportunity. And while all of that is occurring, we're going to continue to invest in the research focused on small and mid-sized operators through the new foundation that we're going to establish under the Farm Bill, through the Innovation Institutes we're proposing in this year's presidential budget, one on pollinators, one on antimicrobial research to give farmers of all sizes opportunities to grow and to prosper. So this is a substantial number of steps we're taking, all told about 23 additional steps we're taking to create more opportunities for small and mid-sized operators. Now, why do we do this? We do it because we care about every farmer. We care about all size of operations. We do it because we don't deem a smaller operator less important than a commercial-sized operator. We don't deem that their family is any less entitled to opportunity than any other family in rural America. We do it because of the value and importance and the contribution that those farm families of all sizes make to the rest of us. We do it because of the securities I mentioned. We do it because every single person in this country has been given a gift, an extraordinary gift, and it's unrecognized. And it's the gift of freedom to do what you choose to do with your life. Think about this. I have delegated the responsibility, the most important responsibility I have to my family is to care for my family. That is to say, I am to feed them, I am to shelter them, I am to clothe them, I am to educate them. I have transferred the most important responsibility of feeding my family to someone else. That's the great thing about America. 100 years ago, I couldn't have done that. 100 years ago, I would have been farming. I would have been connected to a farming operation, or my family would not have been able to eat. Only a limited number of Americans had opportunities elsewhere. But as American agriculture became extraordinarily efficient and productive, more and more of us in this country felt confident enough and free enough to delegate that responsibility to you, to put our trust and our faith in your capacity and your ability to grow and to raise and to produce. That allowed me to pursue a career in the law. It allowed my wife to pursue a career in teaching. Allowed my two sons to pursue careers in law and the nonprofit world. We had the freedom to be whatever we wanted to be. And we would never have had that freedom except for the people in this room and folks like you all across the United States who call themselves farmers, ranchers, and producers. So we do this for more than because it's the right thing to do, more than because there's a need to do it, more than there is a concern about the shrinking middle that needs to be addressed. We do it because every single American will benefit from it. That's why we do it. And frankly, that's why we have a farm bill. And that's why we have all these programs designed to reduce the risk of farming operations, to continue to encourage more people to want to do this so the rest of us can continue to delegate that responsibility without worry. You folks are amazing people. You have written a story that is one of the most successful stories in the history of this country. And I appreciate how frustrating it must be that it is often not appreciated by those who don't farm, ranch, and produce. But I can tell you, as long as I'm secretary, I'm going to keep reminding all of America, the powers to be in Washington, and every capital of every state of this great country, all the big cities that I go to, all the people I talk to, they're going to hear a consistent message. And that is that we owe a debt of gratitude. We owe an enormous debt of gratitude to our farmers, ranchers, and producers. And we ought to stop with the criticism. We ought to stop with the questioning. And we at least ought to take a moment to reflect on how fortunate we are and how much freedom we have because we've got great American farmers, ranchers, and producers. God bless you all. Thank you.
Any questions? Thank you, folks. Thank you. Yeah, what's